It's All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. If you don't know the group Boy Genius, there's a good chance you know one of the members of their trio. Boy Genius is Julian Baker, Lucy Dacus, and Phoebe Bridgers. They've just released a self-titled EP, and today, a conversation with these three talented songwriters. We're gathered in the studio here at NPR just moments after they finished their Tiny Desk concert to talk about the music they love and the music they listen to. Individually, they've each performed a Tiny Desk concert in the past. In fact, Julian Baker is one of the few artists who's done it twice. We talk about the often nerve-wracking experience of playing in an office in daylight, but I start the conversation wondering what the first song they played together was and how it all began.
The first one we arranged was by the hand.
Oh, right? Yeah, totally.
But because, the first one we wrote together, was Salt before or after Idaho?
So it was before, because okay. Idaho was literally like the while last. They were setting up the microphone to record it.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
so it was Bite the Hand. So I'm going to play a bit of Bite the Hand, and then you can paint the picture where you were and so forth.
I can't hear you. You're too far away. I can't see you. The light is in my face. I can't touch you. I wouldn't if I could. I can't love you how you want me to. I can't love you how you want me to. I can't love you how you want me to.
So, maybe not this recording, but the first time you sort of got around and tried to figure it out, you said the arrangements were put together. Where were you? And
well, Julian and I flew to L.A. because that's where Phoebe lives, and we had one day before 4 days at Sound City to record, and I had written this one at home. And
just Richmond? Or
well, yeah, Richmond, Virginia, just like in my room thinking about Julian and Phoebe and what we all share and maybe something we could all understand. But like the round that happens at the end wasn't part of the plan yet, and like the instrumentation wasn't thought out yet, and so we went to Phoebe's drummer Marshall's house.
Brother's sister's husband's wife.
Yeah. In Pasadena, and like hung out on the couch and started with this one.
Is this the round stuff that you were talking about at the end?
Yes.
That's cool to hear this.
I can't love you how you want me to.
I think it's such a good call, Lucy, that we took out the guitar part. You know what I mean? So it's like a little surprise. But I absolutely love when people start clapping at the end and then we keep
and
singing.
Then you do the
It's nice. It's like cute.
When we went to play it on All Songs Considered the other day, Robin stepped on it. He talked right at the part middle of the
Every single radio person has done that.
Yeah.
But it's almost like part of its story now is that it tricks everybody.
Yeah.
It's a golden moment. What do you think you bring out of each other? Like when you thought, Lucy, you're sitting and thinking about working with these two, Like, what is it?
I associate Phoebe and Julian with having real strength in darkness. They're also like very wise and funny people that I trust as people, not just artists. So I kind of did assume that it would be very easy to work with them, and it turned out that was right.
Y'all want to add anything to what maybe, let's say, Julian, what Phoebe brings out of you?
I think for me, the quality that I admire in each of you is your comfort in expressing yourselves and your, I think, like, entitlement is, it has a negative connotation, but I think it only has a negative connotation when you talk about someone who's over-entitled. But you guys feel a strength in being and demanding the things that you need. You guys take up space well, and you don't seem to have the reservations that I do about taking up space, and so I think being around each of you is healthy for me to see that sort of behavior modeled.
That's awesome.
Thanks, yeah. Man.
You're welcome.
Something just clicked for me, which is that I've done kind of a lot of collaborating. So I check myself quite a bit with my own solo music, especially when I show it to someone, a friend, to kind of like bounce ideas off of. I apologize for myself a bunch, or I'm like, this one line is dumb. And there's just like a level of checking myself that I do even privately. And then when I go into a room and collaborate with especially like older people or someone who's technically more established or just has been around longer in music, I like that doubles and triples. And with these guys, I actually check myself less than when I make music by myself. Like, I just have the idea and I don't have to apologize for it. It just comes naturally. And I didn't know what to expect. I was like a fan, obviously, of both of these guys, but I was not surprised, but pleasantly arrived at our dynamic.
Are either of you exchanging lyrics or helping other people with lines and songs and things like that? Is any of the creative part happen, like especially lyrically together, where you say, yeah, that is a good line, you know, and support each other that way? Or I've got an idea for that. You're all nodding, which doesn't work well on the radio. But
oh, yeah. Just to clarify, you mean with our own personal music?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I sent you both, like, the last record that I put out. I was like, please tell me how this is. Please help. And I think y'all were one of the only people that I trusted that with. And you each were so kind and sent me back, like, a song by song.
Nice.
Yeah, it was, like, really sweet.
We should compare, Phoebe. Oh.
Yeah, we should.
I'm like, just demos. Now remembering that because it feels like an eternity ago, but it was...
We'll publish that if you'd like.
Yeah, totally. The, like, mix, or not mix notes, because I guess it's less production stuff and we're just talking about the content of the songs, but I respected y'all's opinion so much, and similarly to what Phoebe was saying, I think I felt not intimidated to share the songs with you because I felt very much at ease and very supported, and like the feedback that you each would give me would not have an ulterior motive and would be delivered in such a genuine way that even if it were like, this line could change or this line's a little corny, which I don't know if that happened. I would love if it did, though. Now I'm going to go check the email and see if either of you called the songs corny.
I've been just listening to, I don't know if you, 50 years ago, the Beatles' White album came out, and they've just released like all of these outtakes. So the Beatles are, for the White Album, they were all in a studio working on songs together. And you just hear them sort of, I'm doing hand gestures on the radio, this is great. You can see them all sort of pushing each other in different ways and helping each other and supporting, or sometimes cutting remarks, you know, or whatever. But it's all in, it's all working together to make this thing. And it's friendship, and it's the best of friendships where, you know, they've known each other. At that point, they were all about 26, 27, so they'd known each other for, you know, 10 years or whatever, and it's just beautiful to see that relationship, but also to see, like, the people who you think are some of the greatest songwriters not sure of, like, a line in Hey Jude, put your hand on my shoulder, you know, where Paul thought that was a stupid line, and Lennon thought, hey, that's a beautiful line, you know, and you just go, wow, so... Anyway,
it's crazy hearing that stuff be worked out, and it's such a treat. Or what yesterday used to be scrambled eggs.
I love that. Yes, right.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
No.
Because
it's real.
Yeah.
I'm amazed. Scrambled eggs.
No.
Yeah.
No.
The jokes come true with the Beatles, like, 100% of the time. They just
oh my gosh,
completely follow through with all their jokes.
Well, that's coming true.
There's so much spontaneity with that. Like, when I was in college, I went to this, like, weird lecture where they had the guy who worked on... It was either the White Album or Magic Mystery Bus.
What's
a white... Yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
what's
fine.
A white... Is, Magic or Glass Onion? Which is that
on? Mystery School Bus.
Glass Onion?
Glass Onion's on the White Album.
Okay, yeah. He was, like, the snare part at the beginning was intern-y engineer, like, made a mistake editing it, and then Paul was just like, let's keep it. Can you imagine, like, screwing up the Beatles session? And then them just being like, what? Sounds fine.
Yeah.
Cool. Both of those awesome things.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the Beatles, but you want to play something. Let's start with whoever. Raise your hand first. We'll pick a song and play it. It could be old. It could be current.
Me? I'm on. We sent the songs in, the suggestions. Now we're talking about the Beatles. And I feel like they're such a controversial band. Like, they used to not be. I feel like the Beatles used to be ubiquitously loved, but I meet a lot of younger people now that seem bizarrely jaded about the Beatles, and just why?
Yeah.
They're amazing, and they remind me so much of my mom specifically. I feel like my dad was super into, like, hair metal and, like, Southern rock, but my mom was, like, Beatlemania. 100%.
Play one, then. Play one that mom played around the house that you
Hey
loved.
Jude.
Okay. Hand on your shoulder. Yeah. Okay.
It's really sweet.
I'm going to play the White Album reissued, just came out this week. I have a conversation for folks with Giles Martin about how it all came together. That aside, I want to play this, which I haven't even listened to. I want to play this Hey Jude. Hey Jude wasn't on the White Album. It came out as a single the summer previous to the White Album, but it was worked on during the White Album sessions. And so this is an outtake of Hey Jude. So you can hear how songwriters who many of us admire alike a lot put together their songs. So let's listen.
What's that?
Come on, sunshine.
Hey, Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it bad.
Right, this is take one, apparently. So the first time they, together in the studio, played it. But how does it feel to hear someone else who, like, and you know the finished product kind of well, how does it feel to hear them like this?
It's really interesting. It feels very precious, you know, to see a song that's so iconic in its nascent form, I think.
Yeah, I like to interact with things devoid of hype. And, like, to listen to this song, which clearly has been treated to some of the most hype that a song could be treated to in this world.
Yeah.
At a point when they just had to believe in it without anyone else there.
Yeah, because that's a thing that I somehow always forget when considering music historically, that this song, I guess... removed from the machinations of like press and publicity and like the engine that sort of a label or a company puts into a release. As an artist, like, you're not sure what song is going to be people's favorite. When you release music, you don't know what is going to resonate with people. And I feel like you all were talking about this, where it's so interesting to see what people latch onto, because at least for me, it's almost never the line that I write that I think, oh, that's a good line, I'm proud I wrote that. It's always some random, not throwaway line, but a line I maybe wasn't as confident about, or a line I was unsure of, ends up being something that people latch onto as a very special moment. I think that's probably true of our record a lot, because there's so many like intuitive decisions rather than calculated decisions.
Yeah.
Anybody want to play a song of theirs that has a great line in it?
You should play Phoebe's Scott Street.
Oh, no.
Oh, the shower beer.
Gosh.
What? Shower beer. I hate beer. Also, BT dubs. Which is like, it makes the line even sadder to me, because
You don't even enjoy beer.
I don't even enjoy beer.
Lucy and I were having dinner analyzing your song, Phoebe, and we were talking about how that little couplet does that beautiful thing where it gives you some objects and paints a whole image, like the Read My Mind Killers.
Oh. Let's listen. And tell me if there's a couplet at the beginning or end.
Oh, no, it's right at the beginning.
Okay. All right, let's play it.
Walking Scott Street feeling like a stranger, with an open heart, open container. I've got a stack of mail and a token. It's a shower beer, it's a payment plan. There's helicopters over my head every night when I go to bed.
Repeat the couplet again. What was the couplet that we did?
I've got a stack of mail and a tall can. It's a shower beer. It's a payment plan.
Oh, right, yeah. Right.
Which, it grows on you. You know, it just sets the scene so perfectly. It's like two objects, and then the two objects recontextualized. And you know so much about that person, or like about what's happening. And I think it's really poetic and good. Good job, Phoebe.
Damn.
I almost want to turn this into like having Lucy pick a Julian song.
Oh, I could do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, look at that face.
Please don't do it to me.
We just did it too, recently. Good News is my favorite Julian song. There's my favorite simile is in that song. My ribs creak like wooden dining chairs.
Yeah, dude.
That makes my body hurt.
Really?
I hear that. Yeah.
See, that's really interesting. I won't say anymore.
Always scared.
I was just saying off mic, but now I'll say it on mic. It's really validating that you like this song, or that folks like it at all, because I always feel like this song bores people, because it was sort of an experiment in minimalism, I guess, for me writing it. I really like that song, $100 by Manchester Orchestra, because it is so good, and it's crazy. That song is like, when I heard that song, I thought, wow, you really can just sit there and scream with an electric guitar and it'll sound awesome. And then I like directly ripped that off to do a 3-chord song with like the same melody, same everything.
And there's something so emotional to me about like the Manchester song and this song, like not needing to rhyme all the time, just like saying what is on your mind without form, when what you think of me is important, and then rhyming the next line with important, you're saying like, my brain can't function with this information. I'm laying it out on the table, and it's so emotive. And Leonard Cohen does it all the time. Bob Dylan does it all the time. Like, I actually think not rhyming can be more effective.
Yeah, it's closer to how you would actually speak.
Yeah.
And it, just because we're talking about it, like there's a $100 line that gives me chills. The part where he says, "It's not even that I'm all angry." Because that's like what you would say to a person in a fight. It's not even that I'm all angry. I just want to know why you would do this thing.
Yeah.
And putting that into a song feels like you're sitting in the car with your friend while they explain like a fight to you, or while you're like, you're a third party witnessing an event. Oh, here it is.
Stacked up on top of a picture of me when I tried to call. No one answered. It's not even that I'm all angry. Just wanna know why you would do this thing you said. There's an understanding. And I offered you a small dog in the kitchen. I just wanted you to feel at home. And that's why I'm fine, I am fine, I am fine, I am fine. I just need $100.
It's so good.
I am fine, I am fine, I am fine, I am fine. I just need $100 from you and you and you and you and you.
Good stuff.
That is good choice.
Good. It's really good.
You were thinking of a song, because we've each picked, well, not we, amongst you, you've picked songs that each one of you have loved of the others. And
oh.
You can pick a Lucy song, Julian.
It's so hard to. I think is it called Trust, Lucy?
Yeah.
That one is the one that resonated with, I really love the shell in the way it seems very dense, not in that the words are convoluted, but you convey a lot in few words in the shell. If the body and the life were two things that I could divide, I'd deliver up my shell and be filled with somebody else. That whole thing is like so much for me, and it happens in like 10 seconds. But trust is like so, it's almost, yeah, I don't want to say the opposite. I don't know. We'll listen, and I'll explain.
I set a fire on the stove and fed it every word I wrote. I watched my journals turn to smoke. Now all there is what I spoke. I decided long ago to make the most of what I know.
if I trust in something else, and I don't need to trust myself. I've learned a lot since I began, but I think I was wiser then. Trying to put you above, I cannot tell if I'm in love, or whose regard I'm thinking of. If beauty is the only way to make the night go away, I'll plant a garden in your brain and let the roots absorb the pain.
I get the impression that I maybe even said this at the beginning, you haven't heard this song in a long time. As songwriters, you have songs that you put, you know, were important at the moment, and then they're either not important, don't fit, or, and then you hear it again. Do you get a rush of emotion? Because these things, all of you write songs that are not casual. We'll just say they're not casual at all. And so, did that bring something? It looked like it brought something back for you, Lucy.
Yeah, it's just weird to like hear my voice at that time too. Like, yeah, I don't really play that song, but. Yeah, my heart rate is like up right now. It also like reminded me of that lyric about if beauty is the only way to make the nightmares go away, I'll plant a garden in your brain and let the roots absorb the pain, is a line that a couple people have, you know, come up and talked to me about. There's this woman, Hannah Bradley, that made a painting for me that's like this brain that has a tree growing out of it. It's like the lyrics are on it, and she gave it to me at a show in, I think, Dallas, and it's in my house, and it's just kind of wild to have been affected by so many lyrics, you know, throughout my life, and then to just be on the other side of that and know that it matters to people is like, I can't wrap my head around it.
It's the best gift that you can give. Just accept it as like this thing that, for whatever, that you don't have to pat yourself on the back for it, but just know that you've done this thing, and it's such a wonderful thing, the gesture, that someone will carry something in a way. And the truth of the matter is, what you all know this as songwriters, like, you do this thing, you have this intent, to some extent, intent in your songs, and they're taken completely, like, not the way, oftentimes, the way you think.
Oh,
and that's just fine. And if, I mean, well, it should be, because if you don't feel it's just fine, oh my God, it's going to be really hard to live.
Yeah,
true.
It's true.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. I'm talking with Julian Baker, Phoebe Bridgers, and Lucy Dacus, Boy Genius. And you're listening to All Songs Considered from NPR Music.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from MasterClass, offering online classes taught by masters of their craft. Each class is shot with cinematic production quality and offers on-demand lessons loaded with exclusive content. Listeners can learn about photography from Annie Leibovitz, writing from Malcolm Gladwell, music production from Armin van Buuren, and a whole lot more. For a limited time, All Songs Considered listeners get a free 7-day trial when they sign up at masterclass.com/allsongs. Support also comes from ELS Studio 3D Premium Audio, available in the all-new 2019 Acura RDX. Surrounded by 16 speakers and 710 watts, ELS Studio 3D lets you take studio-quality sound on the road. Developed with 8-time Grammy Award-winning recording engineer Elliot Shiner, it's a whole new dimension in sound that lets you hear the music the way it was originally intended to be heard. Precision-crafted audio performance, exclusively from Acura.
I'm Bob Boylan. I'm here with Boy Genius, Julian Baker, Phoebe Bridgers, and Lucy Dacus. We're going to go someplace completely different I asked you to pick some songs that you want to play. We went down a different road, and I love going down different roads, but I just want to change the mood. This is something that Lucy picked, and here it goes.
Oh, when you're smiling. I love music that just like immediately you can't be in a bad mood.
Yeah.
To it.
The whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you laughing. When you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through.
Was this something around your house, or where did you pick up on Louis Armstrong?
I don't even remember when I first heard Louis Armstrong. I feel like actually it might have been from my grandma. You know, her basically her just saying like new music is bad and this is what real music is. And like I don't know, she never like sat me down to show me music, but recognizing her taste and realizing that it's, you know, of a different era and it's still good. You know, as a kid, like there's so much newness. And you interact with like new toys or like what's on the kids station of the radio. I think it was like a real moment for me to realize that there's so much that's already gone on that's, you know, worth taking in and caring about. And I don't know how to like explain that as a child development stage, but just like realizing that there's this whole past behind you that's really rich. And I love that song because it's so simple, but it immediately just like makes you feel warm and happy and
the sentiment.
Yeah.
And I think that the generation you're all growing up in has a deeper understanding for more music, past, present, and I'll say future because it felt right, but certainly past and present than any other generation that ever came before. My generation, at least, I'm just oversimplifying, but my generation rejected everything that came before it and wanted to say, you know, give a big finger. Rock and roll to me was a big finger to every other music that existed and was a way to start afresh and find your own identity within it. And punk to the extreme does that. And that's how I felt music was all about. It was all about identity and self-identifying, find something you were a part of making, and that's who you were, and that's how you define your generation. And now I see like this other path that happens now, and some of it is just because of technology and being able to hear. I can pull up Louis Armstrong in no time like that. And I think it's a beautiful thing that though you can embrace the present and love music that's of the present, it doesn't mean that you have to reject the past. And I'm really grateful of your generation for teaching me that lesson. I like that.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Phoebe, why don't you pick me a song that you wanted to play for the whole world today?
I think First Timer by Elliott Smith.
That was an album came out after he died, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So First Timer, Elliott Smith, on record New Moon, I think it was called, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And do you want to tell me why? Is there any?
Yeah, it was one of the first CDs I bought with my own money. And Elliot, to me, was like an accumulation of all of the influence I got from my mom. Just the singer-songwriter scene, but it was mine. Like, my parents didn't get it. And my peers didn't get it. It was just mine. Someone I thought was really cool showed me Elliot. Her name's Carla Azar. She's a drummer from LA. And I wanted her to think I was cool so bad. And she actually showed me an instrumental song called Kiwi Mad Dog first, and I didn't get it at all. Totally went over my head. But then when I delved deeper, I didn't even tell her how much I resonated with it. I just walked around with my headphones in and listened to New Moon over and over and over and over and over, which is weird because I actually love his instrumentation and stuff, and it's completely stripped back on this record. But this song is so sweet to me.
First timer. wishing I was someone else when I see you by yourself in a corridor where you find yourself now blocked by the door you lock. You won't do what the doctor ordered. You won't see someone else. Come on back to me. Bright tomorrow, you say you feel hollow, and you know it's 'cause you are, well at least so far.
What was that line you loved? If you feel...
Oh, you feel hollow and you know it's because you are.
Oof.
Ouch.
It just hits you.
Yeah.
And you all knew this song? Is that... Or not?
I've heard it. I don't know the words.
Yeah.
Also, I love how sad his guitar solos are in context. He's just like... Because you feel hollow and you know it's because you are. I'm going to shred a little bit on an acoustic guitar so you can think about that.
Yeah. Just take a little break to do a sort of languid solo.
Yep.
It's never like piercing rock.
Which he can do. And he did in Heat Miser, which is... I love that about both of you guys, actually, is that you guys both restrain from your guitar abilities.
Oh, yeah.
And you can unleash it at any time.
I was going to say, there's some unleashing, too, that happens. That's why it works, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what works better is knowing when.
Well, knowing when to. Yeah.
So let's do one more pick. Julian Baker, we got a little bit of a Manchester Orchestra song, but I don't think you fully got a pick that you came with.
Yeah, one of the ones, I was trying to think of these, and it's like so high stakes when you're considering... your one or two songs.
Yeah, I asked them all to pick a song that meant something somewhere in their life.
But bizarrely, this song, I picked a song, Doesn't Remind Me by Audioslave, which I feel like is both an underappreciated band and song by that band. I mean, they're not underappreciated, they're like wildly popular. But I feel like people know Rage or people know Soundgarden. But this Audioslave song is so... beautiful, just like the poetry of it, if you remove it from the context of the song and you just kind of like read the lyrics. It's gorgeous and actually quite sad. It reminds me of my dad because it was, I think, like one of his cultural touch points of like rock that was on the radio that we could agree about and would listen to in the car. But then, you know, as I moved through liking more, I guess, obscure aggressive music, this song, even though it does live in rock on the radio world, still resonated so much. The last line, well, we'll talk about it after.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mentioned last line in the song. I'm gonna scoot down to the end. That's technical term. Scoot.
Scoot.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you're skipping the shred.
Yeah, right.
It's so you hear
okay,
that.
Okay. All right. Here's a little. Here's a little of that. Okay, we've heard enough of that.
That's me shredding alone on a line 6 in my bedroom at 12.
I saw those fingers.
Yep.
I like throwing my voice and breaking guitars, 'cause it doesn't remind me of anything. I like playing in the sand. What's mine is ours, if it doesn't remind me of anything.
That line, it's like embarrassing. So I like throwing my voice and breaking guitars because it doesn't remind me of anything. Like, to a musician, that's so relatable. Like, imagine an activity that totally removes you from the anxiety and self-awareness or insecurity that you feel, or maybe being like plagued by contemplating memories of the past that are traumatic, or future anxieties. Like, something that gives you that respite is so...
It's a total comfort.
Yeah, and so the whole song is basically, you know, like, for a musician, yeah, it's throwing your voice and breaking guitars, but the whole song is like the list format of all these things that don't remind the singer of anything. And it's neat because they're such random and kind of disconnected images or activities, but to hear them stacked all together poetically conveys this really beautiful image. And it also has this other layer of how much my dad loved that song is amazing, because it's sort of, to a person who doesn't write poetry, to a person who isn't in a band and doesn't have the very obvious mechanism that like me or that we have of externalizing those feelings, that song gives a voice to people to name their aggression and to experience that emotion. I think that's what's so beautiful about like Chris Cornell's writing, you know what I mean? And about how widely consumed it is, even if it is like stadium rock and has a wah pedal involved. It's very beautiful.
I just realized I'm full of regret that we didn't smash our instruments after our tiny death. Like, after Idaho.
Oh, God, why didn't we? That do just, like, so an good, incredibly delicate song. Maybe that's last day of tour. Because we won't need them again.
Yes.
Ever again.
I'm just going to throw my like, that's such over. A lame thing to smash. My tiny mandolin.
Julian, you've done this 3 times, this tiny desk thing 3 times. Phoebe twice. Lucy twice. Easier, not easier.
Not easier.
I feel like every time, I guess the 2 times I've been here, I've just been blushing super hard and aware of like my sinuses, like my nose has been running, or like my lips have been quivering, like there's a bunch of spit in my mouth. I don't know. It's like this place just makes me flip. I don't know.
It takes like an entire scale off the top and the bottom of my range, like the nerves.
It's like carpeted and it's in an office, and also there's so many people so close to you. And so while the format is, I guess, kind of analogous to a house show, the sonic properties are different, which throws you off, but also the vibe, it's more like a living room show. House show leads me to believe that it's got this like loose, loud energy, but this is something very quiet, very intimate, and I always get timid.
Also, it's like potentially people seeing you that just trust your opinion, Bob, and might not know the music. Like, there, I bet there are people that come just like, oh, we hear that there's a tiny desk, who knows who's playing.
You're talking about the people in the room.
Yeah, like, yeah. But today it felt like maybe people were knowing what was going on, but still there's this element of having to like do right by you and your taste, you know, just like prove you right or something.
That's,
just so people know, it is my little literal physical working desk. People come who are working here at NPR, and sometimes I really wonder how news or anything gets done, because what were there? There were 150, 200 people, many NPR employees, but then many friends of NPR employees.
Yeah.
And anyway, I always like to hear the perspective of artists, because it's different, you know, we've done 800 or something of these, and isn't that insane?
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
That is crazy. I'm really happy to see you. And it's nice that Lucy, I'm going to start with Lucy and Julian, because I learned of Lucy through your show, Julian, at DC9.
Yes,
in 2016. So I knew you knew one another back then, and I'm just trying to sort out like how everybody knows everybody. Like, did you know when Lucy went on tour, did you know of Lucy? Was she just someone added to you because of label or something?
So actually, my manager, Sean Rohr, is from Richmond, and Lucy is also from Richmond. And so Lucy was put onto the show that we played at DC9, and we met then, and I believe, no, because you sent me a private link to the SoundCloud, because No Burden wasn't even out, correct?
That was after the show, right?
Yeah, it was like right after the show, because I had not heard of your music, because nothing was up on the internet, yeah, of course. And I watched Maps on Walls, like...
Map on a Wall.
Did you hear me start to say the right one?
You always and then start second, to say it right, and then correct yourself to the wrong thing.
That's like the... story of my life is like overcorrecting out of anxiety and then doing the wrong thing.
That's what Tiny Desk is for me in my brain. I'm like, you don't know what's about to happen. And then I do the wrong thing instead of the, yep.
But it sounded right.
Yeah. Yeah, except for the joke. Do you want to tell the joke actually right so that when people who come to the Tiny Desk can...
Here's the joke. I'll tell it eloquently now just so you see the difference between me in a Tiny Desk and out of a Tiny Desk. So there are two muffins in an oven, right? And one of them looks at the other muffin. Never mind, this is all so bad. And says, it's getting hot in here. Mm-hmm. And then the other muffin says, oh my gosh, a talking muffin.
Yeah. It's like, I get the absurdity of it now.
It's short enough.
Yeah.
Do you want to go out on one of your songs? What should I pick?
Ketchum, Idaho is the one we always... I mean, but we did do that in the Tiny Desk.
Yeah. What about Salt?
We could do Salt in the Wound. That's one that I feel like we all contributed equally to that song. We each pressed our limits on that song.
Yes.
Awesome.
In like completely different ways.
Yeah.
Are you going to record some more?
We don't know yet.
There's no other song at this moment that we could record.
We're not keeping anything from
the flight's not for a few hours, folks. Thanks for doing this.
Of course.
Yeah, thanks.
That was awesome. Appreciate it. Boy Genius. Their one and only EP is self-titled. You can watch them perform three of those six songs on NPR Music's Tiny Desk Concert Series. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered. But you haven't decided about taking a leap in me. But you take and you take like silks up my sleeve, tied corner to corner, never ending, trick after trick. I make the magic, and you unrelentingly ask for the secret. Neck full of mockingbirds, all calling your name. Well, I tried to sing it all back like I heard it, it don't sound the same. I'm gnashing my teeth like a child.